Let's talk about you.
Welcome to What's Wrong With You. Each episode, we'll ask one guest the same series of four questions.
What's wrong with me?
What's wrong with
so
me? It's scary to answer that question.
I have a lot of split ends.
Just the next question. Tell me about a time that you failed.
It's a loaded question.
The third one. If you could go back in time and tell yourself one thing, like, how real do you get with people about
it? I don't tell because they think I'm a crazy person.
What would you say?
I'd say prepare everybody else.
I'd say just go in and watch.
You're gonna fuck up and then fess up and then fix it.
Great beer,
sweet beer, man.
Yeah, great beer.
For sure. Okay.
And the last question, when does that come up now? When do you think about that moment or that failure or that lesson? Who am I? I'm your host, Sarah Kleigman. Coming up on this episode of What's Wrong With You. Margot Lightman is an incredible storyteller, author, performer. She's done all of the things. She is a leading expert in the growing field of storytelling. She's written two books on the subject, the best-selling Long Story Short, the only storytelling guide you'll ever need, and her latest, What's Your Story? A workbook for the storyteller in all of us. Her comedic memoir, Gawky, Tales of an Extra Long Awkward Phase, came out a few years ago. She's written for NBC, DreamWorks TV, the Hallmark Channel. She's won the Moth Story Slam. She's been on, I'm pretty sure, like every NPR show ever. She teaches, she tours, she speaks, she writes. She's also a mother and just a general badass in all senses of the word. I met Margot when I was a talent manager. She was one of the first lit clients I ever worked with. I was there for the behind-the-scenes ride of getting her first book into the world, Gawky, Tales of an Extra Long Awkward Phase. I always found her so inspiring and super authentic. And after I left management, once I had rehumaned myself, she was one of the first people that I grabbed lunch with, and she was immediately accepting of this new version of myself, which I will always be so grateful for. I was so excited that she was down to do the show, and we agreed to do it via Skype. So Margot, for this episode, is in Los Angeles, and I'm in New York, but with our powers and the internet combined, we bring you this next episode of What's Wrong With You. Margot, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What's wrong with you?
I have a strange belief that I am some sort of a private eye looking to solve all of these cases of the world. And basically no one wants my insight or my business or my two cents of what I think's going on here. And I really should just learn to mind my own business. But instead, I just try to solve mysteries that don't need to be solved.
Like any mystery, like if anything seems a little bit off, you're like, this feels like a job for Margot the investigator.
Yeah, I go in and I go in hard, and really it sometimes becomes like consuming in a way that I get really distracted by these like small things. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
I mean, I have probably like 4,000 examples, but here's one. Okay. So I used to live in this neighborhood where I would go to the nail salon a lot. Not a lot, but I mean, like there was a regular nail salon that I would go to, and I like to be a local and get to know people. So I knew that the owner was a Cambodian refugee and that had like really been through a lot in her life and was a really tough woman and awesome in a lot of ways. Even though she looked very small and frail, she was older. She was probably in her, I guess, late 60s, but she was someone to be reckoned with, you know? And so one day I go in there and I'm getting my nails done, and she and this other manicurist are getting in a huge fight. And it's a big fight where the owner who was doing my nails was like screaming in the face of her employee who was about four times her size. And then she kept coming back and painting my nails. And then going back, and then she would be like, excuse me. And then going back and like getting in this woman's face, and then coming back and be like, sorry. And then going back to me.
Were they fighting in Cambodian or were they fighting in English?
They were not fighting in English.
Okay.
So I couldn't understand anything that they were saying. But I wanted to so badly. And then it got so bad that a third manicurist stopped doing her pedicure and got up and physically broke it up between them. And then the owner came back and started painting my nails. So meanwhile, I'm like, oh my God, this is great because it's a mystery because I don't know what they're saying, right? And so I was like in heaven because I think that had they been speaking English, it would have been a little bit boring for me because I would have known what was wrong. But I didn't know what was wrong. And then the second manicurist came up and slammed down her address, meaning like, send me my check there, I'm done. Mm. I could gather that. And then she packed up all of her things, like in a very loud way, the way we do when we're really mad, and left. Like, she just left, okay? So, and then the owner of the nail salon was like, I'm so sorry. And continues painting my nails. And I go, oh, that's okay. I love drama. What happened? And like, she does not want to tell me. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's like, oh, it's nothing, you know? And like, she just lets it be. And she finishes this manicure. And I walked out of there. And Sarah, I was so consumed by like, what happened? What was that fight about? I need to get to the bottom of this. I need to figure this out. It's none of my business. And it really like took over the rest of my day. And so one of the nails chipped like within 24 hours, which they had some rule that you could go back and get it fixed if it does.
So you're like, yes.
Yes. I'm not 100% certain that I didn't like see it start to chip and like make it a little worse so I could go back in. I go back in to be like, all right, I'm going to get to the bottom of this the next day, less than 24 hours later. Okay. So I go back in, and the second manicurist, the one that got up in the owner's face, the one that she had the huge fight with that packed up all her stuff and left, was just sitting there working as if nothing had happened. And everything was back to normal the next day. So then I was like, now I'm even more confused. And I will never know. Like, did they have a huge talk last night and work through it? Did the second manicurist finally get her way? Is this just a dance that they dance every week and this is their relationship? Like, I have no idea. And I'm telling you that this was years ago and I have since moved. I don't even live in that neighborhood. I walk past that manicurist whenever I can and I poke in and the other woman is still there.
Oh my God.
I know what kind of car she drives. Like, I am obsessed with this and it has nothing to do with me, but like, I can't solve this and it's none of my business.
Has this ever gotten you like into trouble? Like, if for me, just hearing you be like, I love drama, tell me about it, like makes me like blush and get worried that someone's going to be like, it's none of your business. Get out of here.
I do feel like I'm not great at small talk, you know. I kind of go there with people really fast. And I think for the most part, it's wonderful. But in other ways, it's like really, I think some people find it invasive for sure. I mean, I have to state what I do for a living, which is that I write about storytelling and I tell stories for a living and I teach people how to tell stories. So I do kind of see the world in that everything is a bigger story than, you know, it's a story waiting to be told and I've got to uncover it, you know, and that is the way that I see everything, you know? So I do think that impacts, it makes me really good at my job, but I do think at times, I think for my husband, it might be a little bit annoying for him that I can't just like have a normal day.
Well, I remember, I think it was in your first storytelling book when you said something about how when you think about entering into a situation, I think you said something about like, is this going to be dangerous or not? And like, that's your bar.
Yeah.
And I love that. Sure. I love that.
Am I putting myself in danger? No. Is this, you know, something that's going to be risky? Yeah, exactly. And then if not, I tend to say yes to a lot of things and try strange things. You know, like we have this, I have too many examples of this, so you can cut.
No, this is good. We'll do at least one more and then we'll move on to the other stuff, but I'm loving this.
Okay. Like, I have so many. It's humiliating. So like we were getting some work done on our house and I had found this handyman and then my husband was home with the handyman and I was on my way home and he texts me and he's like, look, I just found out that our handyman is also a ghost hunter. So I am begging you when you get home to just like not get into it with him because I'm paying him by the hour. And if you could just like walk in and just mind your own business. And I was like, well, why did you tell me? Like, of course, like you could have just, I would have never known he was a ghost hunter if you hadn't just told me he was and then told me not to do anything about it. Right. Like, so I
come home and I was like, well, well, well. And of course, like, he wants to talk to me about it and he's a ghost hunter. And I was like, could you go up in the attic, just take a look around? My husband's like, now we're paying him for another extra time because you have to do this. And he goes, he came down and there were no ghosts. And I was like, no ghosts. And he's like, yeah, house is clear. I don't feel anything. I was like, oh gosh, I live in like a regular house. Haunting it, like nothing weird's going on here. He was like, no, it's completely clean up there. And I, and then he, so this cost us, you know, an extra like half of an hour of his time for me to have the investigation. And then I started talking about his relationship with his mother, and my husband was like, wrap it up, wrap it up.
Wait, how much does a half an hour of ghost hunting run you these days?
Well, it wasn't ghost hunting, he was handymanning, but because we were paying him by the hour, I asked him to start a little ghost hunting while he was here.
So it's like, I don't know. It's just like a permanent sort of unstoppable curiosity.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, I heard David Sedaris in an interview, who is one of my great heroes, and he's so amazing. And he said, you know, some people worry, am I oversharing, you know, when he says that. And he goes, and to me, there is no oversharing. He's like, I'd love to hear about your tumor. His way. I think it was something like that. I am completely misquoting him, but it was some interview, you know, that was the gist of it. And I kind of agree with that.
I totally agree. I mean, that's why, like, pretty much immediately this show is like, talk about some really intense stuff immediately. Yeah. Like, super into that. And I think everyone, like, yeah, relates to that and kind of longs for that and feels, I mean, maybe like terrified if they're like cornered into having a conversation like that. But I think, you know, listeners from the safety of their car right now are like, yeah, I love hearing these like genuine and vulnerable conversations. Well, moving into the genuine nature of storytelling, we'll go into the next question of our interview, which is, Margot, tell me about a time that you failed.
There was a lot to choose from, Sarah. A lot. I had to really whittle this down, but I'll talk about me getting really obsessed with a case that did not need an investigator. Mm-hmm. One thing that I am not a failure at, I would say, is that I'm pretty organized with finances and always have been. And I try to really stay on top of paying bills on time and such. And, try to manage, you know, like I try to manage my credit well. When my husband and I both got our credit scores done, I think it was like a year ago, and I was 10 points higher than him. I left the printouts on the table and asked him if he'd like to frame them. And I just was so pleased with myself. It was like one of the greatest accomplishments ever. So I just, it's something that I would say that I'm not a failure at, is being, you know, responsible with finances. I think I had a good example with my parents from that, and that I was really not raised with a lot of money, raised with parents that worked very hard and then eventually, you know, were better in a better financial place as a child. And I think that made me understand the value of money and how to manage it. So a couple years ago, I started getting all of these overdue bills in the mail. And they were not addressed to me. They were addressed to someone else. I'll call him Wilbur. And Wilbur was like in a lot of trouble, but all of these bills were coming to my house and they were overdue. And then they would be in the pink envelope, and it would be, some of them are coming from the IRS, collections agencies, different loan officers. I mean, and it was like a lot of bills and notices, and a lot of them would say failure, fine if ignored, failure to respond, a fine, on the envelope, it would say something like, if tampered with, this much fine, if destroyed, this much fine. So it was really kind of scary mail. And I started getting, even though it wasn't addressed to me, and I would write return to sender, not at this address. And then the mailman would just, a couple days later, the bills would come back, but like the mailman would just bring them back with return to sender. Like they would get sorted and then come right back to me. It was like this problem that I couldn't stop. And I was like, why is all of this coming to my house? And I lived in an apartment that I had been grandfathered into, that my friend had been grandfathered into, meaning that I had known who had lived in this apartment for the last at least 10 years, and none of these people were Wilbur. So I didn't know why this mail was coming to my apartment. So I became super consumed with it. And I really wanted to fix this and solve this problem and figure out what was going on. And so I put a note on the mail box that said, under no circumstances should you be delivering Wilbur's mail here, does not live here. And then he would still, and it was just adding up every time, it would return to senders and new ones would come, and he kept delivering it. So then I went down to the post office and I was like, hey, I need to speak to the manager. I mean, literally, you would think I live in Los Angeles. You would think that I live in such a small town USA the way that I treat Los Angeles, because I really am so small town living in a big city. It's really funny. But I go down there and I was like, hello, your mailman's not doing his job. He keeps delivering these things. This is the name of the man's bills. That his debt is coming to my house. It's stressing me out. I'm very on top of my finances and this man is not. And it's making me feel like I'm not on top of my finances now, and it's stressing me out. And so the guy was like, okay, I'm sorry. I'll talk to your mail guy and tell him no way should he deliver it. So then it keeps coming. So I do a stakeout. I waited to catch the mailman putting Wilbur's mail into my box. Like, I waited to see him do it. Like, I was watching and I was waiting. This is how obsessed I get when I'm working. In my head, I was like, you're on a stakeout. Stakeout that no one is hiring you for and no one cares the result of. And so I waited in the, and I don't know if I waited in my apartment or the bushes, but like, I caught him and I was like, hey. And I opened the mailbox in front of him. I was like, Wilbur, Wilbur, Wilbur. These are all for Wilbur. My name is not Wilbur. There's a note on here. Stop delivering it. This is not my mail. And he was like, whatever. I mean, this man, the mailman, just, he didn't care. He didn't care that Wilbur was not on top of his finances, that it was stressing me out. It was making me hate. Like, he did not care. He was just going to keep shoving them in there. And that irked me so much, because I, at this point, cared so much about this mail. Like, I was talking to friends about it a lot at parties and no one cared. I was just all consumed with it. And I was like, this has got to stop. And I think it was really that I felt like it was an attack on all of the work I had done to maintain being on top of my finances, that this guy every day was just ruining it for me, that I would open my mailbox and I would feel like failure. And I couldn't make it stop. And so finally, I just hit this point where I was like, I'm going to talk directly to Wilbur about this. And I did some internet searching and I found his phone number and I called
him. Oh my God.
I called him on the phone and I was like, Wilbur, this is Margo Lightman. And he was like, uh-huh. And I was like, I think you know who I am. He was like, I don't know who you are. And I was like,
why would he know who you were?
Because was diverting all of his mail to me. And I was like, I live at blank address. And he was like, uh-huh. And he's like, well, I've never lived at that address. I go, yeah, I know you have it. But for some reason, I'm getting all of your mail. And I said, and not just any old mail. I'm getting all of your bills and your debt notices and your letters from the IRS and your legal problems delivered to my house. And he was like, well, I'm not doing that. And I've never lived there. And I go, okay, let's, and I just got really real with him. I was like, let's be direct here. I have really good credit. You clearly don't. But I've worked really hard to have this. And every day I open my mailbox and I have stacks and stacks of your bills. And I think what you did is you found a person with good credit to divert all of your debt to you and just make it my problem. Well, it's not my problem. It's your problem. And you need to take care of it. And he goes, look, I'm not saying I'm delivering this mail to you, but if I were, I would tell you to just throw it out and ignore it. I go, I can't ignore it. It says there's a fine if I ignore it. He goes, well, send it, return to sender. I was like, I've tried that. And he's like, just let it go. And I was like, I'm not going to let it go. And he was like, look, this isn't your problem. I was like, it's my problem. You're making it my problem. He goes, I am not making anything your problem. You're making it your problem. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, look, you said you have perfect credit, Margot. And I was like, yes. And he goes, well, enjoy that. Appreciate that. And stop worrying about other people's problems. Let it go. And I was like, just stop sending the mail. And I hung up. And here's the thing, Sarah, is that Wilbur had a really valid point, which I think it's like, really valid for a lot of people's lives, which is We let other people's problems mesh into our own lives and our own happiness and consume us. And at the end of the day, when you look at your own life, is it really that bad? Or are you worrying about this person's problem or that person's problem or something that is none of your business, you know? And so it was really consumed me to a point that I had like called a stranger on the phone and was like staking out this mailman. And he did have a really valid point. But the biggest failure for me was that I couldn't let it go. Like the mail kept coming and I just kept getting angrier and angrier. And the only thing was that made it stop was that we moved. And, wow. And when we moved, there was actually, it was really strange because around Christmas that year, we got no Christmas cards or anything and nothing like forwarded to our house. And I was like, this is weird. And I went to the post office and there had been a problem with our mail forwarding and all of our mail, like none of our mail had been forwarded. So it really like in this weird mail mishap, I lost Wilbur in it. And that it was like an act of God just kind of took it away. But I couldn't stop letting other people's stories and issues feed into my life. He was right. And I couldn't make it stop.
I love that story. I also love how like real you and Wilbur got on the phone immediately. Okay. And how he's just like giving you this life advice or like you're calling to be like, I have my shit together. I shouldn't be dealing with this. And he's like, hey lady, no, you don't have your shit together because we're on the phone right now.
Yeah. And I think he was just sort of like, this is crazy. And it was.
So, and there might not be a perfect answer, to this, and you might not have even been capable of listening in the moment. But the next question is, if you could go back in time and tell yourself one thing, what would you say?
I would say it's not your problem.
So you would go back and say, like, not your problem. But do you think you'd be capable of listening to that at the time?
At that time, no.
Now, is there anything you feel like you would be able to say that would have landed with yourself at the time?
At the time, I think the thing that he said, which is like focus on the good things in your life. I was focusing on a negative thing in someone else's life and really consumed by it. But I think if I could have focused, I was pregnant at the time. I was about to have a baby. Like there was good things in my life, you know, that I could have focused on instead of, you know, being all consumed by someone else's issues. So yeah, I mean, if I could have said, it's not your problem. And then also said, now switch and look at good things in your own life or tackle your own problems, you know, any of those things.
Wilbur was so wise. I mean, in some ways, in other ways, wildly irresponsible, it sounds like, but in some ways, very wise.
I had this vision that he was on a bed with just stacks and stacks of unpaid bills and multiple burner phones when I called. That was my vision. I think he had multiple identities and multiple, I don't, but here's the thing, Sarah, you see what I mean? I have a whole case file on this. Who knows anything? And also again, years ago, let's move on. It's just like, you know, why am I still casing the nail salon? What is wrong with me? Do you
know what I mean? So all of these things that are like all in this sort of similar vein, and thinking about like in particular, like the Wilbur story, when does that come up now? Like, when do you think about that moment or that lesson or that failure today?
I do think about it. I do think about, is this your issue or is this someone else's issue? You know, like I do love my friends very much and I'm very fortunate to have very close friends, but if one of them's going through a hard time, somehow that's, I'm going through a hard time, you know, and I have to separate it and go, are you okay? You know, if my husband's having a bad day, then suddenly I mean, and in a lot of ways, it's very beautiful. It shows how much I love everyone in my life, but those are people that I'm really close with. And even still, I have to shut it down and go, you know, you are yourself. This is someone else's energy. This is someone else's issue. They will figure it out or they won't. But you gotta, you know, you've gotta focus on what you can do. And if there's nothing you can do, let it go. You know? So I do think that I try to separate and ask myself the question, is this your issue or someone else's issue? Is this your problem or someone else's problem? And not to sound too LA, but is this your negative energy or someone else's negative energy.
No, that's all so real. And I think so relatable, like, you know, especially if like a friend is going through a hard time. Like, I feel like, you know, if I'm talking to my friend in LA and I'm about to go to like a party in Brooklyn and she's like crying and having a really hard time, then I feel really weird, like hanging up the phone and being like, off to my party. Like cause I want to like hold some of that for her. And so I would imagine when this sort of thing happens for you, if this sort of thing happens for you, like in extreme cases with strangers, that it probably takes even more self-control to like protect yourself when you're dealing with that stuff with family and close friends. So that's like a really beautiful, hard, lifelong lesson from Wilbur.
I know when you were asking, you know, what's the story that really symbolizes this? This, it was no doubt that this is the story of it. I think it's a complete, I don't know, you know, allegory for it, you know, it's just, that's it in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. The fact that someone was like, just worry about yourself and enjoy your life and don't worry about me. Also, I don't even know you. Why do you even care about me? You know? And it was like, why do I care? I was like, he's not on top of his finances. Who cares? Okay.
I love that.
So don't worry about him.
I think we've reached mostly the end of the show. If there's anything else you want to say or add to everything we've talked about, now is the time.
I think that with failure, there is so many great things that come. And, you know, I tend to look at life because of what I do as one big story. And so I do think the stranger the instance or the bigger the failure or the worse a day later on in life will be the better the story. And so, and if you look at life from that lens, I think sometimes failure isn't so bad.
I love that. Thank you so much for being on the show, Margo. It's been so
Thank
nice
you.
To have you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Find out more about today's guests or leave me a message at whatswrongwithyoupodcast.com. If you like the show, please share it with a friend or five and leave us a review on iTunes or Google Play. Thanks for listening.